You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
Good. The good times had to end sometime. Here we go.
Are you a little downtrodden? I mean, we've had some pretty long prospect minutes. So, right. I mean, you know, I think we're going to talk about a couple systems here in the next few prospect minutes, and maybe it'll cleanse our palate a little bit.
Right. Makes you appreciate what you have, and you know, when you have it.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the Baltimore Orioles today. But before we do, remind everybody you can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTompFWFB, me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. And I think when you start with the Orioles, you got to start with Austin Hayes.
Right.
And Darius and I talked about him as a guy that him and I both like for this year, but I want you to kind of dive deeper.
Right. Well, I'm going to start with the caveat that if you play in an OBP league, bump him down a few notches because he fits in with the Baltimore plan of attack, which is don't walk. So he's got that under control. He jumps right in with Adam Jones and Mark Trumbo and all the rest of the brigade they got out there. But I think Hayes is a sneaky add. I see, like, in a lot of redraft leagues, like guys like Clint Frazier going over Hayes, which is confusing to me, because not that Frazier's not the better player long term, which I still would think he is. But, like, you know, he's got nowhere to play this year with the Yankees. And Austin Hayes is penciled in for a starting job in a very nice offensive yard. Mm-hmm. So I'll take Austin Hayes all day. The upside probably isn't all that much different than it is now. And that's not a slight on the kid. It's just I think he's pretty much a finished product. He's not going to literally all of a sudden learn how to walk at a clip that's going to be changed, move the needle very much. But I think he can hit 270, 280 with 30 homers. And I think he could do that as soon as this year. He was second in the minor leagues this year in home runs with 32. So, I mean, he's got the power behind it. He had a decent amount of speed when he was in the minors, especially in college, but that kind of slowed down. He should get a handful of bags this year. He got 5. I could see him getting a couple in Baltimore. They don't run too much, though, so maybe that probably won't be a big part of his game. But don't sleep on Austin Hayes. I mean, he's worth a pick in redraft and dynasty. He's probably... there's probably one other guy in this system that's worth a redraft pick. But Austin Hayes is definitely the top guy out of that. He's a middle-of-the-order run producer bat. So.
And that is literally what my analysis was. So, I think he could – his ceiling is like 35, 30, 10 in terms of home runs and stolen bases.
Right.
With a 270 to 280 average.
Right.
But you're not paying anything for it, especially in redraft leagues. 377th pick in terms of ADP on NFBC right now.
That'll shoot up.
That'll shoot up, especially, you know, there is a chance the Orioles, they've been linked to a number of names in terms of outfield players. So there's a chance if they add an outfielder, especially a left-handed bat, because that team is very right-handed, that he could get bumped out of the lineup. But I almost wonder if they just find maybe a platoon partner and now I'm blanking on his name. Guy's playing left field, but should be
Trey Mancini.
Yeah, exactly.
So. I like Trey Mancini, and that's actually the soup's going to be made a little bit different way. But Mancini and Hayes' long term value isn't that dissimilar.
All right. So let's talk about the next guy. I'm assuming you were alluding to Ryan Mountcastle.
He's my number two. He's my number two guy. He's a weird prospect in the sense that he has played every affiliated game with the Orioles. He's played shortstop. He's not a shortstop, though. I don't think they can even fake it in this day and age. ultimately, in the Arizona Fall League this year, he played third base the entire time, which I think was ultimately his future spot, and it's going to make sense with Machado leaving. Mountcastle will probably be ready to start, not this upcoming year, but the next season, I could see getting significant time at third base. He's an exciting hitter in the sense that he's got a lot of pop in the bat. 6'3", 195, he's got a projectable frame, should add some mass. This season he had 18 homers and 8 steals out of the shortstop position, made contact roughly 80% of the time, so he's right around, it's a playable mark. Doesn't draw a lot of walks, though, I'm sure you're surprised. He does recognize spin, though, so it's not a fact of, just not knowing what swing at everything or anything. It's just the fact that he's an aggressive hitter, and he's going to take it with plus bat speed. He knows his game. A lot of extra base hits. A large percentage of his hits do go for extra base hits. He's a guy that I like. He's a guy that we've always known. I don't like how Baltimore handled it, though. I mean, you always know he's not going to play shortstop. You could read everything about everybody telling him he's not going to stick a short. And, they kept him there, which I guess doesn't matter. But when you see the writing on the wall with Machado, I don't think it's a secret they're not re-signing him. Why would you be shopping him? And I stand corrected. He actually did play 37 games at third base this year. So they are getting the transition going. I think he's the heir apparent to Manny Machado. You care to guess how many doubles he had in 127 games this year? The proof more power is coming.
Oh, doubles this year. 45.
High A and double A. 48.
Oh, that's a pretty good guess.
48 doubles in high A and double A. So he's got some extra base thump, a little bit extra he can add. He had 18 home runs, had a triple. I think ultimately he could be a 25 homer bat, which is kind of nice. You don't really, you're not hearing much about him. You can get him on the cheap. He's going to be inside my top 100. He's not in everybody's top 100 list that I've seen, especially over the years past or anything. The only question with third base is the arm strength isn't that great, but if he's playing shortstop, it can't be worse off. You need a better arm to play short than you do third. So, a lot of his value is ultimately going to be tied to whether he's moved to the outfield. If he moves to the outfield, he'd kind of crush him a little bit because he wouldn't stand out as much, but a third baseman that can hit .280 with 25 home runs and steal 5 to 10 bags doesn't sound that bad. He's not his ceiling's not all that dissimilar from Austin Hayes, but he's just a few years, farther down the pipeline at 21 years old. But I think he ultimately walks more than Hayes, and he's going to play a more premium position.
All right. Talk to me about the next guy.
Chance Cisco?
Mm-hmm.
I think he's the other guy I touched on earlier that is worth the add in redraft formats this year because I guess he's penciled in as the starting catcher. I mean,
that was something Darius and I discussed.
They like Caleb Joseph in the sense that Buck Showalter is old school and likes his catcher to be defense first, but Caleb Joseph literally is a negative with the bat, so I don't really know if you can roster him the whole time. I mean, Chance Cisco, 267, 340, and 395 was the slugging percentage at AAA Norfolk. Norfolk is, though, I want to make this clear, it's a hard yard for left-handed hitters to hit home runs. So, I mean, you're talking about Cisco as a guy, we kind of bagged on his power, and then he goes in the futures game and hit a home run 2 years ago. Like, kind of like Louis Urias now. And I don't think the power is, he's got more power than that. And not to bag on CBS because I don't think their projections are up to date right now, but you look at their projections for Cisco right now on their draft software, they got him for 22 homers, which is laughable. But, hey.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah.
I think it's still early for the projection system for them, so I'll cut them some slack.
Well, I think I don't know. They don't have necessarily the best projection software.
Right, okay.
You look at Steamer. Steamer has got him projected for 289 plate appearances, 7 home runs, a .258, .325, .391 line.
Right, I could see that. And then give him the more at-bats if he's a starter. Get bumped the homers up to 10. I'm a little more aggressive on the batting average. I think ultimately, not to be bland again, but I think he's a guy that can hit .280, kind of be one of those guys, .290 even.
And he walks.
Right, and he does walks, which is kind of the eyeball. They'll probably get rid of him. But, left-handed swinging catcher, that's always got some value. Second-round pick in 2013. So he's been through the system, been through the ranks, had the pedigree. he doesn't have the swing path to generate a lot of fly balls, so the home runs are capped anyways. I'm not really betting on the raw power anyways. I think during peak seasons, he's a 290, 15 homer guy, which is a nice catcher.
Mm-hmm.
JT Realmuto without the speed. So what does that get you?
I mean, it's not a super sexy profile, but I think he's a guy that, especially if he – I think he's a real interesting catcher, too, for this
year.
Yes,
definitely.
Because, like, he's not going to provide necessarily negative value like a lot of other catcher twos will, especially in, like, 15-team leagues.
Right, and that's a good – that's a really good thing. That's a really good baseline for this year. Don't expect anything more when you grab him, and if the offseason keeps going like this, he might be the starting catcher getting, you know, five starts a week.
Mm-hmm. All right. Who else is next on the list?
We are digging down to a 19-year-old Baltimore Orioles pitching prospect, D.L. Hall. First-round pick this year out of a high school in Georgia. Supposedly has three-plus pitches. He's only 6'1", 80, so a little bit less on the size, but he has a nice curveball and fastball on the changeup. Now my question is, D.L. Hall and Baltimore Orioles pitching prospect. How long – is it fitting that that's his initials, D.L.? Because, I mean, he's an Orioles prospect. I mean, I hope not. I do like the upside. I don't mind the height. A lot of people bag on six-foot pitching prospects. I don't care about that. Might not have the downward plane that you need, but if he's got a service – if he's got two nasty off-speed pitches, it kind of offsets that. So he's a guy that's going to need to produce and going to need to show people – throughout the lots of way, because I mean, a lot of guys hearing Baltimore Orioles and pitching prospect, they're just going to write you off anyways. You're done already. So he's potentially a nice bargain, but I wouldn't pay up for him now because you simply don't need to, because he's miles away. He's only in the GCL this year and only through 10 innings. So he's going to go back to that. I would imagine he starts off 2018 in the GCL again. Nice strikeout stuff. I like the delivery. It's just going to be so far away. So he's a lotto ticket in every sense of the word. And, you know, in speaking of lotto tickets, the guy I have ranked after him, remember Hunter Harvey? He's still number five in the system, so does that give you an idea where they are?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm looking at, you know, Hunter Harvey, trying to analyze him is pointless at this point. 32 innings pitched the last three seasons. And he's never pitched more than 87 innings in a season. So all I'm going to tell you is he's worth the upside gamble of if you can stash him, because if he's healthy, I mean, he should be good, I would hope. But you don't know, right? I mean, this is a complete wild card. If I tell you anything, it's educated guess. He's only going to be 23 years old. You can look at it a positive thing, saying he hasn't had much stress on the arm in a few years because he's only pitched 32 innings over 3 years, but he's also had arm injuries. Had groin injury that cost him all, you know, 2016 pretty much. 2017 was supposed to be his big comeback year. He pitched 18.2 innings. 6'3", 175, very projectable frame. Good command from the scouting reports from years ago when he actually did pitch. Again, it's a lot of ticket, but it's one I wouldn't mind taking. But it's American League East, and you probably don't want to roster too many pitchers in the AL East anyways. So, I mean, is Hunter Harvey anything that you would interest you? Like, I mean, I know you haven't taken any prospects really in the RDI league. Is he a guy you might grab?
I don't think in this league it's in the RDI league, because, I mean, outside of one team who is only rostering prospects, everybody else is going to be rostering 10 to 12 prospects. So we're talking about, in a 20-team league, we're talking about the top 250 prospects are taken. I don't know if Hunter Harvey ranks there for me. So I did take him, or I did buy low on him in that 30-team, 100 roster spot league.
That's a perfect league for him, because you could get a, you know, a guy fantasy number three out of it.
Exactly. So I mean, you know, and if he doesn't hit, oh well, I've got another right. You know, 60 prospects.
Right. And he had plus command when he was healthy, so that's a good thing. I mean, he's had elbow soreness cut down 2014, Tommy John cut down 15, and most of 16. And, you know, 2017, he had a groin injury, and it's a litany of things, but if he still has that plus-plus curve and that, you know, low 90s fastball and that good command, he's something to watch for.
Yeah.
Number seven for me is Tanner Scott. He's a relief pitcher. I don't know if you remember the Arizona Fall League. He was throwing 100 miles an hour. The Orioles are weird, man. He's a relief profile all the way with that fastball and slider combination. So what do the Orioles do this year? Put him in the rotation in Double A, which is fine. I like that if you're going to, you know, make him build some length and help him develop his pitches and stuff, you know. But no, what did they do? He pitched 3 innings exactly per start every game.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, he look at the game logs. I'll take a screenshot and post it. But it's every 5 days he took the ball. He threw 3 innings every day, except for a couple oddballs, which are shorter. But he went 3 innings every time out. So he's there grooming him for that role. How much value does a multi-inning dominant reliever have on a 90-loss team? I don't know. But they're going to find out with Tanner Scott. He throws gas. He's a future.
You're not kidding. I mean,
right.
He never pitched more than three. He pitched 3 innings in every start from April to the beginning of January. Or, sorry, the beginning of July. And then he had one start with 3.2 innings, one start 3.1 innings, and the rest of the way.
Right.
Were either three or less.
Right. And he started 24 games in Double A and pitched 69 innings. So, I mean, go figure. 87 strikeouts though. He does walk too many guys. He had a brief major league call up this year. You know, can't take much out of an inning and 2/3 sample, but he throws hard, did well in the fall league. He's a guy to track. If he comes up, especially with the Britain thing and if they come to their senses and trade Machado, which what in the hell is going on? I don't understand why they still have Machado on the roster, but I don't know. That's just me. If they can do him and maybe package like a Brad Brock into another deal, and with Britain being out, Tanner Scott could be an option to save games later down the stretch. File the name away. Don't draft him anywhere. But just keep the name in mind. 100 miles an hour with a 90 mile an hour wipeout slider. Literally all he throws, just those two. That's probably it as far as major league impact this year. I mean, you're looking at Cedric Mullins, who's probably a fourth outfielder. We've got a little bit of power, speed, oft-injured kind of guy. Jomar Reyes, if you're going to take a stab on anyone in this system, it's probably probably him as a lotto ticket throw. And the reason why I say that is I remember last year I hated Jomar Reyes. I hated their profile. He's advertised as a big power hitting third baseman that hasn't really ever hit for power yet. So, I mean, what is he? But, he still really, if you look at the numbers, still really didn't, hit for much power this year. But there's one thing I want to touch on because it's an important part of his development. His contact rate went up from in 2016, it was 78%. This year, at two stops in 2017, it was 89% and 83%. So I think this is the year where he's going to be able to tap into that 65-70 grade raw power that he's supposedly possesses. Because if he can do that with these new contact gains, if he doesn't lose any, then you might be looking at a potential dude. He probably has to move to first because he's a huge-ass dude, which, again, would make – and right now he's not hitting – the bat doesn't play at first, doesn't play at third either. But if he can make that power adjustment, he can definitely play at third. I still am skeptical if it can play at first, but you know it's better to get something out of nothing. He was the big high dollar signing for the Orioles, so I'm not really going to give up on him yet. I like Keegan Aiken as a back end guy, but he's an American League East pitcher, so I'm not going to touch him. But any other organization, a lefty that gets up to 95 and sits low 90s with four pitches, I like. Adam Hall is a Canadian shortstop that they drafted in the second round this year. He's got some interesting skills, kind of fits the J.J. Hardy mold, but he's out of high school, so he's going to be years away. And one guy, if you play in any AL-only leagues and want to get a little sneaky, you can grab his name's Anthony Santander. He was a Rule 5 pick last year from the Indians. All he did, and so they kind of stashed him on the DL, played that bullshit game with him. He still didn't fulfill the minimum requirements to be kept. So now Baltimore has to keep him again this season because he didn't play in enough games. What he did in 2016 for high A in the Cleveland organization, 290, 368, 494, 42 doubles, 20 homers, and 10 stolen bases as a first baseman slash corner outfielder, switch hitter. I think he's got a lot of potential. He's just the Rule 5 process kills guys like this because he pretty much had a lost season last year. Played in 29 games across major leagues and the minors. Only, you know, you're looking at 80 at-bats, which isn't enough for a 23-year-old. It's a lost season. But if he can regain some of that magic, he could be a guy. Baltimore should give him a reason to play. What are they? They're going to be terrible, regardless of what anyone thinks. But yeah, him and then DJ Stewart still around. I like DJ Stewart a little bit as a AL only deep prospect play. Michael Bauman and Zach Lowther, two nice arms they picked up in this draft. If I have to pick one, give me Lowther, the lefty with big strikeout numbers. And Cody Sedlak out of University of Illinois was ridden very, very hard in college. Stock's a little down. I think he could be a nice back end guy. But Yeffrey Ramirez could be up this year. They got him from the Yankees off a waiver claim. Put him in the rotation. He puts up decent numbers. Probably strike out about 7.5 per nine. Might walk four, though. But he could be an interesting option. And this god-awful system, that's probably about it. It's a bottom 3 to 4 system in the game, maybe even worse. And, you know, Peter Angelos refuses to dabble in the international market, which is interesting. The backstory behind that, he used to be a labor attorney for, like, workers' rights. And he thinks it's not – he thinks it's unfair to the player on how international amateurs have to enter pro ball, which good for him for having morals and sticking to them, but not
it's
a good –
hurting the organization.
Right. It hurts the organization because he's literally sits out of Latin America. He sits out of posting processes. I remember – listen to MLB Network Radio, and Dan Duquette is on the radio show, and Jim Duquette, his brother or cousin or something, his cousin, I think, is the general manager of the Orioles. They asked him about Ohtani, and he didn't even put in a bid. He goes, "It's an organizational philosophy. We don't put bids in on posting players." So, I you got to applaud the moral high ground, I guess, Angelos has taken, but it might be the worst moral high ground to have if you're an owner of a professional baseball team. Because let's be honest, if you're an owner of a professional baseball team, you have to be willing to exploit cheap labor, right? Mm-hmm. That's the backbone of your organization. And if you morally sit that out when 29 of your competitors do not, well, you're at a huge disadvantage.
That is true. All right. Anybody else worth talking about?
Adamar Rafaela is a impressive sleeper, power speed combination. Other than that, that's all I got.
Well, you can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTopFWFB, me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. Or if you want to send any just really atrocious tweets, definitely send them to me.
not me.
That's going to wrap us up. For Matt and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.